Welcome to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast, proudly sponsored by AJR Sports Science and Healthcare Consulting. At AJR, we are committed to offering a comprehensive range of exceptional services, including applied sports science analytics, healthcare and sports medicine consulting, and leadership and coaching development. To learn more about AJR, visit their website at ajrsportsscience.com. I'm your host, Andrew Rizza, an allied healthcare professional with over 25 years of experience. My career has primarily spanned private physical therapy and public school athletics. Driven by curiosity and a passion for the industry, I created the Behind the Sports Medicine podcast to explore the ever-evolving landscape of healthcare with a focus on sports medicine, physical therapy, athletic training, and sports science. Each week, we'll dive into the challenges healthcare professionals encounter and discuss how collaboration can enhance understanding within the industry. Our goal is to improve the experience for patients and athletes alike. Now, on to the show. On this week's Behind the Sports Medicine podcast, I'd like to welcome Benjamin Beck. Ben is the managing partner and CIO at Beck Bodie Wealth Management in Dedham, Massachusetts. Ben graduated in 2002 from Northeast University with a Bachelor of Science degree in Criminal Justice. Ben also played Division I baseball for the Huskies and was looking to pursue a professional baseball career when he found an opportunity in the financial industry and began working for Morgan Stanley from 2004 to 2005. He then went on to work for Merrill Lynch from 2005 to 2013, where he met his business partner, Jim Bodie. In 2013, Ben and Jim set out to create a firm based on real-life experiences, one that reflects the financial world we live in today and what matters most to their clients' financial well-being. At Beck Bodie, they are committed to upholding their values without compromise and are transparent in their actions and communications, whereas other financial advisors may bend or sway to satisfy a client's emotional needs, they will not. Aside from Ben's business operations, he is an avid CrossFit athlete and enjoys spending time with his wife, Danielle, and his four young children. Now, on to the show. Welcome to this week's Behind the Sports Medicine podcast. This week, I have Benjamin Beck, who is the managing partner and CIO for Beck Bodie Wealth Management. We're kind of switching gears a little bit here away from sports medicine and talking about finance, because I know there's a lot of people out there that want to learn more about how they can, one, secure their finances, maybe work on saving for their kids' college, but then also how to be able to secure a good nest egg for their retirement later in life. So Ben and I have known each other for close to 25 years, maybe even a little bit longer. We had met back when Michelle, my wife, and I had our daughter Lily, was probably a year maybe old. And then Ben's wife, Danielle, worked with me at Sports and PT Associates, and we had met back then. So it's been a long relationship.
It's got to be. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, how old is Lily? I mean, I met her probably when she was around 1 year old on the beach in the Cape.
Yeah. Lily's turning 24. So it's,
there you go.
It's crazy, right? So,
yeah.
Ben, welcome to the show. I appreciate you coming on here.
Yeah.
Can you give the listeners a little bit of background about yourself and then also how and why you got into the financial profession?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm a lifelong athlete. Grew up in Portland, Maine, actually South Portland, Maine. Went to school at Northeast University. It's also where I met my wife, Danielle. As I said, I was in sports all my life, got the opportunity to play college baseball and then professionally after that. And it was actually, I don't know if you know this story or not, but it was actually my foray into finance was due to a client of yours at Sports and PT. There was a client that Danielle knew, and I was in the middle. I didn't know it at the time, but I was at the end of my professional baseball career.
I remember the story.
Yeah. He had mentioned that there was hiring going on at the firm that he was at, large Wall Street firm, and that I would have a advantage being an athlete, or by that time a former athlete who perhaps aggressive, entrepreneurial, those types of things. So when I found that I wasn't going that far in baseball anymore, I reached out to him and eventually got the opportunity to become a financial advisor, which was pretty incredible opportunity for someone that didn't come from a financial background, but was always enthralled with, you know, the financial markets and everything, you know, as you see down in Wall Street and all these things. So it was pretty, pretty incredible.
Yeah, I actually remember this because Danielle was in the office with me, and I think it was more or less along the lines of, I got to find Ben a career type of thing. Yeah. And I think that was probably what it was.
Well, if you remember, I was working in the off season. I was working on the back of a garbage truck.
Yeah.
I don't know if you knew that.
But, you were chasing the baseball dream.
Yeah, exactly. Not something that my wife would probably wanted to advertise to everybody back then, but it was something to keep some money coming in the door while I was chasing the dream, but, moved on from that.
Yeah. And I remember it because it's like, you know, Danielle and I worked together for a long time. And I think, you know, seeing, you know, talking to her, you know, through the years, and then seeing you guys become, you know, you becoming successful is awesome because of the way that it happened. Right. It happened to be someone that she was working with and they were having a conversation, and like, that's how this all started. And we talk about how a lot of doors open up opportunities for people knowing who you know, right? And it's getting into that market, depending on what it is. And I got my start by knowing someone in a clinical setting as a student my sophomore year at Northeastern. And by the time I was a senior, they had worked for Carl and Craig and said, hey, we have a job opening. You want to interview when you graduate? And I'm like, absolutely. And where have I been for the past almost 30 years? Right? Same place. So it does. It opens up some great doors. So,
Yeah, I agree.
You worked at Merrill for a little bit. And then when at that time when you were working in, you know, for a big corporation, when did you sit down and say to yourself, like, listen, I got to break out and do this myself? When did that light bulb or that, did you always have that anticipate or that drive to be able to do that and say, hey, I want to someday own my own financial firm? And then when did that happen?
It's a great question. I can't say that I explicitly did, because you know, realize that I got into the financial industry not knowing the difference from a Merrill Lynch to a Morgan Stanley to anything else out there. And even in the first few years, not really understanding the differences between a stock and a bond and a mutual fund and those types of things. It's really a learn as you go type of business, right? It's not something that in the medical profession, you go to school for a while, right? Before the degree goes on the wall. In our industry, you know, you take a test. You know, scary as that sounds, you take a test called the Series 7 exam, and aside from a few other small things, in a few months, voila, you're a financial advisor, which is pretty incredible. So it is a very much learn as you go type of job. So I really didn't know that even at that time, which was 2004, 2005, what opening my own company would actually entail. It wasn't really the path that I was on. I knew deep down I was an entrepreneur. I knew that the opportunity at a large Wall Street firm is such that it allows you to grow your own business within their walls, mm-hmm. Which is similar, but it's not the same. And hold on a second. We get some.
That's okay. Hey, what's happening?
This is number four.
How you doing?
Yeah. This is Knowles.
Hey, Knowles. How you doing?
Can you say hi? All right. Can you go back downstairs?
Nice seeing you.
All right, bud.
That's great.
Always working from home these days.
Yeah, I know.
When you're home, it's never a dull moment.
Yeah.
So. Didn't really know that was the path. Just knew that I was an entrepreneur and I had the opportunity to do so within a respectable Wall Street firm. So it wasn't until late 2012, like a good 8 years later, 9 years later, where I really had learned over time, and my partner who had joined me a few years before that, Jim Bodie, he and I really started talking about, hey, is there a better way for us to do things? Is there a way that we can better take care of our clients? Is being inside the walls of a big institution with both the positives and the negatives that go along with that, is that the right place? And we came to a quick decision that it was better for us to go out and open up our own business and go that route.
Yeah, and I think that's when, I think at that point, Michelle and I sat down with you because we were at the crossroads too. Like, where are we going to now move towards with our financial stability, right? So, and I, like I said to you pre-recording here, I said, you know, we've done well by you and you've done a great job. So I can attest to, you know, having somebody that you trust and someone that's there that's invested in you as a client and has the best interest for you and your family. And you guys do an unbelievable job. So, I can't,
we appreciate the responsibility. I mean, it's I think that's the thing with investing. That's the thing I've learned over the last 20 years is that you can have all the knowledge in the world, right, in terms of what, you know, the best investments are or not, or different techniques. But if you don't have the full faith and trust from your client and they're not letting you do what you'd need to do to execute for them, then you don't come to an optimal point. And so, and that's something that I've learned over time, the hard way, is that, you know, really should be just taking on clients that have the ability, that have the aptitude to actually do that.
Yeah. And, you know, I think early on, you had said to me, and it's something that always stuck with me, is that the market's going to fluctuate up and down. The key is that you keep investing no matter what it's doing, so you can keep to keep growing at a younger age and as you get older, so you're actually stable financially. So some of those things that we have talked over the years about has been, you know, it's stayed with me. And when I talk to young kids that get out of school and they ask, and even talking to our daughter about it, like, listen, when you can start to invest, you know, you invest a little bit and start to invest more and more and more when you can financially do it, and that's going to pay off dividends later on, which is amazing.
Yeah. It's the runway when it comes down to it, right? It's the length of the runway that you have is the biggest determinant, right? And your ability to take advantage of that. It's really tough though, right? It's, I mean, I don't know if you remember yourself in your early 20s, you know, am I going to put money away? And, you know, there's a lot of things that are out there that are pulling you away, but the people that are able to take advantage of that tend to do really well.
Yeah. So what are some of the key factors to being successful in your industry? Like, you guys, there's probably, I could probably look, well, not a phone book anymore, but probably go online and Google financial advisors or financial firms. How do you become successful and are the choice for people? Like, how do you become the industry leader in your world?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a great question. I mean, there are a number of things, like any profession, right? That you have to have a discipline that you follow.
Yeah.
You know, you have to put in the time and the effort and those types of things. Then there are the more intangibles, right? And the one big intangible that I've learned over time, and this may sound coy, but it's true, is that it comes to telling the truth to folks. And yes, obviously the literal side of telling the truth, right? And there are a number of, you know, not so great players, particularly in the financial world, right, that you hear about, you read about in the news. And there's certainly that cross section or that subsection of people. But, you know, if you really think about it, and something it took me a while to learn is that I'm a human being. My clients are human beings. By our nature, by human nature, we want to grow and establish relationships with folks. And because of the way that we're hardwired emotionally, it is common that we want to put people at ease. You know, it's great to empathize with people. And sometimes in the process of doing that over time, during perhaps tough times in the market or what have you, is that the intention to put somebody at ease may shade the truth a little bit, right? And an example of that is, you know, when I sit down with someone today, one of the big things I talk about, and certainly you might remember this as well in our initial discussions with you and Michelle, is that, you know, I tell folks, I say, you know, in the last 50 years, we've had three downturns in the market that have been around 50% in a decline. Now, that may have been temporary, but, and they all are temporary, you know, the market always trends higher. But that's the type of thing that you have to be willing to endure, particularly with us, as you know, we're all equity investors. You know, we believe in investing in the equities of some of the best companies around in a diversified manner. But in order to benefit from that optimally, you have to be willing to endure the volatility, however temporary, that the markets produce. And I think that during some of the tough times, the markets, it can be very easy from a human being standpoint to want to empathize and say, all right, let's shift your money into something that's not going to be so volatile. But ultimately, that doesn't do you as my client any benefit in the long run. So if I tell the truth, I say, look, this is what we have to deal with. And we're going to come across some things, like a pandemic or things that you never thought.
A presidential election. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So, an attempted assassination, list goes on and on. So the flavor will be different, but the results will be the same at the many types of things like that we're going to face in the future. So as simplistic and as kind of coy as it sounds, telling the unvarnished truth is something that I've learned is so incredibly important from the first interaction, to make sure that not only my client is getting all the information, but I'm willing to diagnose whether or not they have the makeup emotionally to be able to stay in during those tough times. And not everybody has that makeup.
It's interesting because I have to say, just by personal experience, you're a managing partner and the CIO of a corporation or a company, right? That's growing and getting bigger. And anytime I need anything, I can just send you a message and you'll get in touch with me. And that's the great personal experience that I value, because it's like any other company. If somebody is running a business and somebody wants to speak to the person that owns the business or has the vested interest in their client or their customer, you want to be able to access that person. And I have to say, you are someone that I could, if something's going sideways, I can, hey, Ben, can we get on a call and talk about it? And we set up a time we can talk about it. And that's the good thing about having you as a person of interest, because I think that speaks volumes to what you guys provide for your organization to your clients. But the other thing that you had mentioned to me, this is years ago, you can't keep looking at the market day over day or looking at your investments day over day, because one, it will drive you crazy. And two, you're not letting us work or the market work for you. And I think that's an important thing to remember, is you can't just keep looking at your balance every single day, because it'll drive you nuts. You got to let it sit there and let it do the work for you. It's just like when your 401k comes out every single paycheck, if you're investing outside of that separately, keep investing. It's money you're not counting on. Keep investing it month over month, let it grow. And then when it's ready and when you need it, you can then have a conversation about where it's at.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I couldn't have said it any better than you did right there. I mean, it's great rule of thumb is just to ignore, like, your analogy about the paycheck. You know, it's coming out of your paycheck. You're not seeing it. It's going into an account, hopefully being invested right away, and away it goes. That's a good example of a great thing to do as much as you can with your investments. But a lot of things easier said than done, right? Don't open your statements necessarily every month and or look at things every day. But I'll be the first to acknowledge that, especially during the tough times, when we're going through tough economic times, or, as you mentioned, elections coming up and there's volatility in the markets, it's just human. You want to know first, well, what's going on in my portfolio? Then how is this going to affect me or not going to affect me? And yes, I hear the age-old adage of stay the course and don't do anything. And yes, that makes sense to me in the moment, but this is happening. What should I do? And that, I acknowledge that's really different. And I really think that is the true value or an example of the, one of a financial advisor's greatest values, if they're doing this, is that they're constantly and consistently keeping you on that course. They understand through experience that even folks that, don't bat an eye when the markets go up and down, there's going to be some point in the future where something happens, whether it's in their personal lives or just overall in the markets, that's going to cause some emotional concern on their end. And, giving them the dose of medicine at that point might not be so effective. But giving continual, I like to, mentor of mine has always said, it's kind of like vitamin C. You know, vitamin C can't be stored by the body, right? So in order for it to be effective long-term, you have to keep taking it. And I view financial advice the same way. You know, you don't have a brilliant investment one day and you just sit there and expect to be able to collect the great returns over long periods of time without any kind of potential for interruption. My job as an advisor is to really mitigate those potential interruptions and not allow folks to interrupt the compounding, the great compounding that's going on.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, the advice you guys have always given has been amazing. And I think it's that anxiety most people probably, it sets in when they see that up and down and, oh, you know, there's a 600-point drop in the stock market today. And, you know, and that's when they freak out. And I like to see that because I know that you are going to then turn and invest dollars that we're investing with you, buy more of whatever's out there that you're going to invest in at a lower cost. And then when it makes the turn, the upturn, then you're making more money. So I think that's, it's actually good to know that I can just sleep at night and not worry about it. And like Michelle says, and you've heard this from her, she doesn't want to eat cat food when she gets old. Yeah. So
that's funny.
She wants to be able to go on vacations and enjoy her retirement, whatever
that's
may
what
be.
You've worked so hard for, right?
Yeah.
There's so many, I think at least, there's so much of an overlap between finance, health, fitness, even sports medicine. I mean, I was watching one of your previous podcasts with, I think it was Dr. Gill you had on.
Yep.
And one of the things that I picked out that he said, which was pretty interesting, is he was drawing attention to while protocols for recovery and getting people back to the field are very, very important, he made the comment that it's actually emotional state of that attachment of that person. Like, am I ready to go back? You know, what if I, you know, take a step in the wrong direction? My knee kind of feels funny. And I just find that, first of all, I found the whole interview intriguing, but I found such a large connection between that example and what we do, because everything that we can ultimately do for somebody is in fact based on human behavior.
Yep.
And
yep.
Your ability to control your behavior. Mm-hmm. I just thought that was great.
You know, everything we talk about in your business and our business, I always talk about emotional connection with whoever I'm working with. If I know the patient, if I know about their family, if I know what they're doing next weekend, if I know they had a pet that passed away, that connection makes them feel like I have a vested interest in them, which I do, because I'm doing this for a reason. I'm doing it to make sure that they get better. And I like treating patients. So it's the same with an athlete. And that's what him and I were talking about, is that you have to understand you need an emotional connection, but that patient also needs to feel emotionally connected in a way that they know that they're safe to go back to doing what they do or like to do in order to do that. Now, on the retirement piece, like, hey, I'd love to retire earlier. And if more people listen to my podcast and somebody becomes a sponsor, maybe I can retire earlier and you can listen to more of me. But I think, you know, we do things for a reason. And I think we're setting ourselves up for, you know, hopefully having a comfortable life and being comfortable later on in life. But, you know, you did, we talk about personal finance, right? And we look at financial advice and not in this order, but if you looked at personal versus business versus family versus retirement advice, how do you characterize or bucket those differently? Is it kind of the same philosophy for all those? Do you guys look at them differently? Does it have to do with time frame? Does it have to do with age? And I'm sure all that stuff, you know, comes into play. But if you had to pick one of those, being the business, family, you know, just advice for retirement in general, or personal, like how does that work out?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the if it's what you're asking, I think first and foremost, you know, where we all start is what is, you know, whether it's personal, whether it's business related, it's all connected to some future goal or objective, right? It's a, you know, you use the word bucket, which I think is great. Whatever that bucket represents, whether it's business, personal, or otherwise, there is a goal out there in the future, where you're trying to accomplish, right? And so the first place we start is, identifying what that thing or those things that are most precious to you that you want to accomplish. And from a personal standpoint, you mentioned it a moment ago. It's like, look, you know, one of the things that is really important to me and Michelle is the ability when we do retire, you know, to live independently and enjoy our lives that we've worked so hard for, go on vacations and such. And what's very common with you and otherwise, it's that there's that a little bit more down the road is what about if there's grandkids and being able to impact their lives and those types of things. So identifying those goals and objectives of what's most important is the first priority. And the second priority, you know, when it comes to bucketing and planning things out, is actually putting together, to relate it to sports medicine, putting together the recovery protocol. Or in CrossFit, it's the programming. It's the workout programming. It's you've got the goal now that you've established. Okay, what's the programming or what's the protocol that's going to get you there? How long of a time you have? When do you want to retire? 62, 65, you know, as early as possible. And then what are the things that we both have to execute together? Like how much money do I have to put away to be able to achieve that personal goal? Or if it's a business goal of launching a new company and how much money you have to do that in the time frame. And then from our end, it's okay, putting that all together. And then amongst other things is that, okay, what is a reasonable rate of return that you need given your savings to get there? And then how are we going to fund that plan? What type of portfolio are we going to put together to achieve that goal and also to respect and acknowledge the number one killer of all things financial, which is inflation, and to fully do that. So if that makes sense, that's the path at which we start and go along to really achieve those.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great explanation. And, you know, like I just said, you know, how do you bucket those things? And I think you explained it perfectly on how and why. And, you know, when is a good time is the other question. Like, I think, you know, when is a good time for anybody? Do people come to you and say, listen, I can only invest like $50 a month or $100 a month. Like if you have a young college student that comes out and they want to start investing, like how do you start that with them? So, I mean, what would the advice be if you had if I sent my daughter to you and said, hey, Lily, go see Ben, and, you know, very independent, supporting herself, what's the jumping off point for her to know that, one, again, it's the anxiety of not, you know, having enough money to survive. Mm-hmm. But how do you break that down? Do you guys take, you know, a salary and look at it and say, hey, you can probably, let's look at all your expenses and then, hey, you probably can afford this? Or do you just hope the person could come to you and say, hey, I want to invest $100 a month just for round numbers?
Yeah, it's a great question because it's a totally different conversation with a client who we actually have a fair number of clients that are in their 20s and early 30s. I actually do financial planning advice and management for a number of some of the top CrossFit athletes in the world. That grew or originated from just my love of CrossFit, then knowing a number of people in the industry. But a totally different conversation for those folks. You know, the average 20 something year old, while yes, thinking someday I'll have children, retirement's not really on their mind,
right?
I mean, it's not, boyfriend or girlfriend or at some point getting married and the excitement of out there, being out there in the workforce, working for a company I try, you know, when it's a son or daughter of a client of mine, or it's an athlete, I try to really help them figure out, all right, really, how much does it take to run your household, or it's not really a household at that point, but your life? Like, what does it cost to run your life in a reasonable way, right? I mean, you're not going out there and buy, you know, but we're not really taking on, you know, 20 somethings if they're running out there and spending all their money, right?
Correct.
It's somebody that is, you know, we can look at whether it's the son or daughter of a client or somebody that's referred to us, and it's apparent that they have discipline in their lives and they do want to accomplish a nest egg. Don't necessarily know what it's for yet. or they can't really conceptualize fully. Who can in their 20s?
Mm-hmm.
But we'd start exactly how you said, Riz. It's look, what is the type of surplus that you have at the end of every month? And yeah, it's important to have a little bit of a safety net in terms of cash, but I'm a little, I guess, non-traditional in that sense, because more often than not, I find people don't need to use their safety net. So what ends up happening is their cash bucket grows so much, and that's money that's not really working hard for you. So I said, well, look, you know, maybe something around 3 months of expenses is good to have on the side, and let's invest the rest of the surplus every month, whether it's $100, whether it's $1,000, knowing that, look, if a real emergency comes, this we can dip into the portfolio if it's something significant enough to do that. But yeah, as we said, I think right at the beginning of the call, the biggest benefit for that 20-year-old is the runway, the amount of time that they have to compound year over year. It's a really beautiful thing. And that's, I actually love working, particularly with CrossFit athletes, as you might imagine, they're highly disciplined. They're in tune with every aspect of their life, like with their diet, with their workout regimens, with their sleep, they've got everything dialed in to be at that level that they're at. And they are tremendously coachable, which is a big thing for any person that I'm considering as a client, right? It's are they going to not only take my advice, are they going to believe what I say?
Right. Right.
You mentioned it, you know, when we were talking about Dr. Gill and your thoughts on the emotional attachment, that relationship, I find that it's less about the message and more about the messenger. If you're able to, you know, who's going to, as a 25-year-old or a 55-year-old, who is really going to know the ins and outs of investing, you know, more than if they're talking to me, more than I am, you know, I am the professional here, but am I going to be able to teach and educate them to the point that they can do everything by themselves? No. So at some point they have to say, I trust Ben. And I believe that whatever it is he's saying is the right path for me.
Yeah.
And that's a big part of it.
Yeah, that's great. I think, we talked about the 20 somethings a little bit and they don't the investment, but I know for our daughter, she holds on to her money and then just asks me for money. So, I mean, she's a smart kid. So hopefully she has some money to invest, or she's just going to ask me to give her money to invest. And she never asked Michelle, because Michelle will tell her she's not giving her any money. So,
well, the good thing about that too, today, especially, is, you know, everything is digital like now. So, you know, the custodian, which is the platform that we use to safely house all of our clients' money. I mean, everything's digital. So setting up that $100 a month or $500 a month a deposit and having that invested right away and really getting to working for folks, it's really easy nowadays, you know, especially since when Robinhood came onto the scene and made it really easy, showed the world how easy it is to open an account and invest. And Robinhood had its problems, certainly, but, you know, used properly, it's just a great environment in which to invest.
We have a friend that does his own investing. I don't know how the heck he does it, but it's almost, I mean, I'd rather have someone that knows what they're doing. Just like physical therapy, you want someone to know how to take care of you instead of looking at Google and trying to figure it out, and then you get hurt even worse. So how do you discuss the anxiety of not getting a paycheck every week? And what I mean by that, I think you probably do know, but for the audience, when you retire, you're not getting that consistent paycheck week over week. How do you have that discussion with clients? Because I had I have a patient that is a frequent flyer. He had just retired as a lawyer, and he said the same thing. He's like, he's 65 or six, just retired. And he said, I'm trying to get over that anxiety of not having a constant stream of money. And do you ever have that discussion with clients? And if so, what does that look like?
Every one of them. And it does not matter how much money someone has. It does not matter. It has nothing to do with that. That is such an emotional hurdle, of varying degrees, depending on the person. But that transition from I'm working I'm earning an income. The income that I'm earning is sufficient to satisfy everything that I need to satisfy in my life while I'm working, kids, college, all those things. All of a sudden, when we get within a few years of retirement, and the looking at the prospect of ending that income and now being totally dependent upon this nest egg, this portfolio that I built, on which I have no control over, right? All right. You really think about it. If you're working, I have some semblance of control. Yeah. I don't like the job that I work for. I can go get a job somewhere else. Yeah. You know, if I'm not getting the raise that I need to get after a certain amount of years, I can go work for somebody else and get a raise. I can go out and start my own business. You have so much more control during your working years, where most people are not too anxious about the ups and downs, which are very frequent, mm-hmm. a lot more frequent than people give it credit for, the ups and downs of the economy and the market. But you get within a few years of retirement, and people and their emotions shift to a significant degree. And so as a professional and as somebody that has a lot of experience with this, I know that, you know, when I meet with somebody for the first time, and a lot of the folks that we meet with are in what I call the retirement red zone, so to speak. You know, they're within 10 or 15 years of retiring, if not closer. They've accumulated enough money where it's enough of a balance where they care about, right? Certainly. And, you know, now they're getting into that stage of, okay, now it's starting to get real. I have to make this money work. I have to be a lot more disciplined. Maybe I had a financial advisor in the past, but I wasn't really paying attention, and I wasn't really getting the advice that I think I need today. Maybe I've outgrown that advisor. And the emotional and the anxiety that you mentioned is a real thing as that retirement date grows a lot closer. The best and the only strategy that I have as an advisor is to shine a light on that right away, and to make sure that they understand that, yeah, this is a very serious milestone in your life. And that's why it's so important to first, we don't discuss how we're going to invest the money at all in the first few conversations. It's what's most important to you. What do we need to do to get there? In terms of, you know, quantifying that financially first, then what do we both need to do to get there? Put that all together in a protocol or a training plan, and both of us, shake hands as our acknowledgement, or it's our obligation to execute together on this. And with most folks that are willing to go through that process, they are able to enter that period. I'm not saying that mitigates or is something that eliminates the potential for anxiety, but having a plan that they believe in, and understanding what they need to do, what I need to do, it does carry with it a lot more confidence than without, for sure.
You know, there's one thing that I remember us talking about, you know, as Michelle and I are getting in that we're into the red zone, I think, and it does bring that little bit of anxiety, right? So the one thing that you mentioned that made us feel more comfortable was you said you can't think of retirement as dollars today. You have to think of inflatable dollars or inflatable expenses, right? So I think that's one thing you mentioned earlier, is that today's dollar is not going to be the dollar is 10 years from now. So you have to look and plan for that. And one of the things that we also talked about, I think, was, you know, hopefully in that time frame of retirement, that you have less expenses, less financial burden. Hopefully, if you're helping your kids go to college, that's paid. If you have weddings, those are paid. Now you're looking at less expense, less cost of living, even with inflation, right? And you let the money work for you over those, and you're trying to project like people are living longer. So if you're retired 65, are you projecting you're living till 95? So you have to make that money work for you for 30 years. So that in itself, like, people are probably like, holy, I didn't work for 30 years, you know, so how am I going to make it work for me for 30? So I can see where that definitely becomes a jumping off point for a lot of people, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's great, and it's not insurmountable for at least a lot of the folks that I work with or we work with as a firm. It's just a matter of acknowledging that, okay, yeah, you know, somebody that's retiring at 62, a husband and wife, one of the spouses statistically today is going to live into their 90s, right? So you're absolutely right when you say that. It's a three-decade, maybe a four-decade-long retirement. But that's not all, right? Because the folks that I work with, you know, that I click with, that are clients, aren't like, I want to retire with $0 in the bank. No, they have other goals and objectives that are really dear to them. Their children, a lot of times, their charitable giving, having impact in the areas that they're passionate about, and doing a lot of those things while they're living.
Yeah.
Right. Not saying, hey, I'm going to leave this money, but
right.
And that, you know, there's nothing that I take with a higher level of seriousness than, you know, the goals that are put in front of me from a client. So when I take somebody on, it's, well, if this is achieved, if I deem what they want to accomplish is achievable, and we're on the same page, we're going to achieve this. We're going to do everything we possibly can to achieve this. And you know, my role of keeping them going in that right direction is important. But understanding that 3 or 4 decades of retirement, and you think of, hey, what is end of life care going to cost at that
Correct.
Point? You know, and those types of like buckets of money that are to a certain extent not quantifiable exactly mm-hmm. right mm-hmm. now. I mean, you can estimate like anything else. So the importance of what we do, and I don't know if that's the direction you're going, but understanding once you have a plan in place, how you have to invest or should invest the money with the relevant amount of volatility in order, in other words, investing in companies rather than lending to companies, which is bonds, but investing in companies that, you know, our best and brightest companies, the S&P 500, for example, has chugged along over history at about a 10% average per year. After inflation, almost triple that of fixed income in bonds. That, you know, investing in bonds and not investing in equities, I can't see why a rational person who wants to have a great retirement and have a level of independence would ever do that, anything other than invest in a portfolio of companies.
Yeah, I mean, you said it better than me because you're the financial expert, but that's where I was going.
Yeah. I sensed it.
Yeah. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about college funds, because I think that's one of the main reasons why we end up meeting with you way back, was that we're like, oh, we have to maybe think about how we're going to invest in our daughter's education, right? And having sure. just, you know, the one child, for us, it was a little bit more financially feasible. And how do you, the discussions you have with clients, what do you turn to for financial advice for them? And what I mean, I'm just going to throw these out there, and I don't know if they're still all very relevant or not, but 529s to Roths to cash, you know, available cash flows, or however you would word it in the financial terms that you would. But what is your advice? And I'm sure it changes person to person, but as a generalization, how would you steer a client that said, hey, I want to invest something now. My child is 5 years old. They're going to hopefully be going to college in 12 to 13 years. How can I make this money work for their college?
Yeah. And you said it right when you began. I mean, it's every person is different, right? So what I say can't, you know, and shouldn't be construed as advice for a particular person, but I can certainly talk about the conversations that I've had with folks. And what I've found is that most folks, given the option, would like to remain as flexible as they possibly can with respect to how they're investing their money, meaning in the sense of college planning. What you're alluding to is that, okay, I know there are certain vehicles out there that, you know, a client might say, well, but they're called college savings vehicles, so they must be the most appropriate vehicles in order for me to put money away for college. And for a lot of folks, that is true, right? Being able to use a 529 plan, where the biggest benefit of the 529 plan, in my opinion, is you're able to put money into an account. There's really no limit how much money you can put in there. And so long as you use the money for educational expenses when you take it out. I mean, there are certain rules around that, but generally speaking, all the appreciation that has happened along the way is tax-free. So, you know, on the surface, and actually deeper than the surface, that makes a lot of sense for folks. What I find with the folks that we work with is that while they certainly want to put money away, they also want to maintain a certain level of flexibility. What if I don't want to use all of those funds for college itself? What if I'm a business owner and my business is going well, but I'm cash poor? Mm-hmm. What if I want to keep, yes, I want to set aside and bucket for college, but while it's not a preference, if I need to put money away for, or if I need to have some money to take advantage of a business opportunity, I want to have that available to me. Well, 529 plan might not be the right option for them. The biggest thing is they're setting money aside for that purpose. What I find is though most people would rather forego the tax benefit, and it's an implied tax benefit. There's no guarantee that the investments that are inside that 529 that are available to you, which are different from fund to fund, are going to do what they need to do to be optimal for you over that time period, versus having something a little bit more flexible that you have a lot more direction over. So I find a lot of folks, they're like, look, what if I want to use some money to purchase a used car for my daughter when she goes away to college? What if there is something else that we want to do with the money to with the family? You know, again, the business example. So 529 plans are certainly viable. But what I find is opening up a brokerage account and segregating money from your retirement nest egg or anything else for the purpose of college, but leaving that flexibility open to be able to access that money for something important to you that may come up that's not education mm-hmm. related. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, the money's being invested. Invested properly pursuant to a well thought out plan, it's going to be optimized for you. And it's just going to be a little bit more accessible than your standard college plan. And I don't know, you know, Lily, is, at least out of undergrad, right? Yeah. I don't know if you talk to other folks, you know, and have the same experience as I do, but a lot of folks really like that flexibility versus something else.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what we end up doing. Right. And that was, I called them fun coupons, right? Can I get some fun coupons? I think for us, it was the best choice because we were kind of uncertain how that was going to make a turn. And I think if for some reason she dropped out of college, that 529, that money's in there and what are you going to do with it? Right. So I think for us, the time we talked about it, I think it was the best thing for us. And now, of course, she's in graduate school. She's going into her second year, which is pretty crazy for me to even think about it. But again, it's, you know, if needed, it's available, right? And I think that was the best thing about working for you. And I can't say anything about other firms because I've never really worked with anybody else. But you set the time aside, you know, year over year or every 6 months, and we relook and we go over the plan and look at the goals again. I'm like, hey, has this changed from last year or 6 months ago? Where are we at? What's our time and looking? Is it still the same time frame? So there's always that shifting goal. It's just like when we set a plan of care up for a patient, our goals are shifting every, could be 3 or 6 weeks or 10 weeks, right? So we're on a shorter scale, but it's almost the same thing. You're meeting with people and you're having that discussion. So that's the one thing that's awesome about you guys, but I'm just being biased. So
that's all right. Keep it going.
How do you see Beck Bodie Wealth Management growing in the future? Now you guys have started as a small little company, right? And now we've grown and I think you have two acquired practices or even more now. I think you guys are growing pretty well because you do a great job. So what do you see in the future for you?
Yeah. We've had the good fortune of not only being introduced and partnering with great clients like you, but we've also come across some other like-minded firms out there, as you're mentioning, where we offered succession plans to the owner of the firm in order to keep continuity for their business and bringing them in-house So we've done that three times. And so that's been part of our growth path as a company to, you know, not only bring in client by client, but also find firms that exhibit the same core values, the same or very, very similar details as our firm, you know, pursues. And that's something that we're going to continue into the future. We'll always focus on taking the best care that we can of our clients. Ultimately, that's where introductions to our future clients come from, right? I mean, you've referred people in the past, which we've, you know, aside from just bringing on a new client, you know, we've through you met some just fantastic people that we work with to this day, and that's the most fulfilling part for me. But it's also exciting to purchase another firm, and because they, you know, regardless of how like-minded they may be, they can and do have slightly different process on how they deal with things, and it's an incredible learning opportunity for us as a firm. You know, whether it's something as simple as they use this CRM, right, and this turns out to be a lot more effective at, you know, cataloging and organizing our clients' data. You know, that's something of a reality of our experience in terms of one of the acquisitions that we did, where we actually adopted some of their technology that has taken us forward. And it's just a great opportunity for us to meet a lot more folks that we can make a really positive impact. But it's also growth for our company. You know, there's folks that work with us, for us, that they're establishing great careers for themselves by helping others build their wealth, which is, again, another source of fulfillment for me.
Yeah, no, it's great. It's great to be able to see you guys grow, because I know that you're doing, like I said, a fantastic job, which is, it shows with what you're doing. So
thank you.
Is there anything that you would do differently professionally? You know, obviously you've been pretty successful, but I think there's times in our careers like, well, I kind of wish I might've done that, you know, maybe a little differently. Is there anything that you can see in the past, or do you feel like you've kind of taken the path that you wanted to take?
That's a great question.
Sorry, I threw like a curveball at you, but you're a baseball player, so I figured you could hit it.
That's all right. Yeah.
Maybe that's why you didn't make it. You couldn't hit the curve.
That's right. I didn't stay back on the curveball there. A big part of me is that I, you know, there's a saying that's always going in my head. It's like, you either win or you learn. Right. And so I have gotten a question, not the same way of that, but in the past, it's like, well, I don't regret anything positive or negative, because certainly the negatives learned immensely from, right? Everything that's happened has brought me to this point in my career, in the existence of our firm. And I, you know, we couldn't have been more blessed. So, but there's always things like, hey, you know, would I have focused so much more on financial planning, you know, from the get-go, not really understanding really how powerful sitting down with someone and outlining in a very serious, you know, seriously, you know, taking it very seriously, you know, what they're trying to accomplish, you know, where it's very common in our industry to really jump to the investments, right? It's like, you know, invest in this, invest in that. That's fine. But really, without it being tied to a very real, tangible goal for our client in the context of a plan, that investment is kind of meaningless. It's something that goes up and down and really carries no meaning to it. So I guess that there's one thing that I can say without a shadow of a doubt is I wish the I had understood the power and the impact of proper financial planning from day one.
Yeah.
But it's something that I learned.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. And, you know, I think it's trial and error, right? We learn things as we go, and it's, and that's how we get better and we grow, you know, you stay humble, which is good. How about a little, other than you being a Dave Matthews junkie, which I know, cause you've been to, how many concerts have you been to?
Jeez.
I haven't been to one yet.
You haven't.
No, I'm trying to.
We have to go.
Michelle's like, he sounds the same. I don't want to listen to him. I want to go. So maybe I'll have to go with you the next time he's in town.
All right. Next time. We just missed him around here. But yeah, I'll put that note in the file.
We'll definitely have
to go to a show. Yeah. Because I'm actually having trouble finding, Danielle won't go with me anymore, my wife.
I'll go with you. I'll buy you the drinks. Yeah.
Yeah. She's been to so many shows, but I've probably been to like 25 or 30 shows.
And we live two towns away from each other. So there's no excuse not to. We can Uber in. It's great.
Yeah.
My guitars are sitting over in the corner, dusty, and I see yours in the background there. So I know you've been practicing. Yep. I'm not. Fun fact about Ben Beck. What do you want to let the people know about you that's a little bit, interesting outside of the Dave Matthews, wannabe Dave Matthews, because I see you playing his stuff.
Jeez, yeah, that is a good one, though. I'm a big Dave Matthews fan. I'm ambidextrous.
Hey, there you go.
I don't know if that's so fun, but I can do a lot of things with both hands. I don't know. Ambidextrous.
I heard you could eat a large pizza in like 3 bites.
Easily.
According to you, you'd roll it up. As a kid, you'd roll it up and eat it like a sub.
Yeah. Salt. Yeah. You got to put some salt and vinegar chips in there.
That's right.
Roll it up. And you eat it like a sandwich. Yeah. Oh yeah. That's the way to do it.
So I probably gave it away.
Fact, but yeah.
but I probably gave away the Dave Matthews thing. That would probably be the good one. How many concerts, but, Ben, if anybody that's listening today, hopefully we get some listeners, I think we will, is interested in reaching out to you guys, to you or Jim, in your firm, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you guys to help them, build a financial plan?
Yeah, I think the best thing to do first is go to our website. So that's beckbodie.com. That's pretty simple. And either through there's contact forms or reaching out to me directly, ben@beckbodie.com. Following, if folks are listening and they're like, that's somewhat intriguing or unique, but they're not at the point where, all right, I'm not ready to act or really don't know the right questions to ask yet, but follow. I put a lot of things out there on Instagram and such, so I'm easy to find on Instagram and other social media means. So I think that's the best way.
Yeah. And if anybody is interested, I can attest, if you know me, I like my money. So I wholeheartedly, and my wife does too, we have our complete faith in Beth and his firm. So rest assured, your money is safe with him. So it's good.
It's quite the endorsement. I appreciate it.
Hey, Ben, thanks again. I appreciate your time. This was an awesome conversation. Maybe we can do it again sometime. Please give my best to Danielle and the kids, and talk to you soon.
A lot of fun, Riz. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for tuning into the Behind the Sports Medicine podcast, proudly sponsored by AJR Sports Science and Healthcare Consulting. At AJR, we're committed to offering a comprehensive range of exceptional services, including applied sports science analytics, healthcare and sports medicine consulting, and leadership and coaching development. To learn more about AJR, visit their website at ajrsportscience.com. This is your host, Andrew Rizza. If you enjoyed the content from today's episode, give us a like, leave a comment, and share on social media. You can find all of our episodes on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram at Behind Sports Med Podcast, on X at AJR Sports Sci, or check out our websites at ajrsportscience.podbean.com and at ajrsportscience.com. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel at AJR Sports Science. Stay tuned for our next episode.